Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. One of the most prominent and important institutions in our community today is the University of Missouri St. Louis. I'm Don Marsh. I say that not because St. Louis Public Radio is part of the UM St. Louis family, but because the university is ranked nationally in many categories for academic excellence and for the synergy between it and the community. It's a relatively young institution. In fact, it's celebrating its 50th anniversary right now. And with me in studio to talk about all of that is Chancellor Tom George. He's been at the helm for about 20% of those 50 years and undoubtedly happy to preside over the 50th anniversary observances. Chancellor, welcome. Nice to see you again.
Don, thank you very much.
Well, you're right, not in the middle of it, but I guess you're getting off to a big start with regard to the anniversary.
Yeah, the whole calendar year we view as the celebration, and probably maybe the first actual event was our Martin Luther King Day celebration. That was on Monday, and we had a great program, and we also had the Day of Service, and students went out throughout the community and helped in churches, schools, homes of people that needed the help. And our real big event is going to be on February 1st. It's a Friday, and that's going to be a glamorous kickoff at the Two Hill Performing Arts Center.
I'm sure you've had a chance to review those 50 years and look back either formally or informally. Is there anything in particular that stands out in your mind that really has caught your attention?
Well, everything was a happening. You know, the formation, for example, of the School of Optometry, the creation of now our 14 doctoral degree programs, the building of the campus, I mean, starting from simply a clubhouse to now 350 acres of what's really a gorgeous campus. You know, it all has been growing and developing, so almost everything that's happened has been exciting.
You know, looking back over the list of chancellors, for most of the time, just a few people had the job that you have now. I look at Chancellors Tuhill, Margaret Ross Barnett, Arnold Groveman.
Mm-hmm.
I think from 75 to the present time, four people have been running the university.
Yes, right. I mean, Arnold Groveman, I think, was chancellor for 10 years, and Margaret Ross Barnett, for 4 or 5 years, Blanche Tuhill for, I think, 12 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and you've been there?
Almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years.
Yes.
What do these various individuals bring to the table?
Well, each one's had a very important part in the development of the university. For example, I mentioned optometry earlier. That was associated with Arnold Groveman bringing that. When you look at Marguerite, what you see there is perhaps a move to open up the campus to the community and make us even more integral to the community. And then so many programs under Blanche Tuhill got developed and added to the university, making us grow to be what's now a major public research university.
Yeah. Community is probably one of the most important words that can be used in association with the university and the community.
And that's what we're all about. And we are part of the land-grant university system. That's the University of Missouri. And part of our obligation and mission is to reach out to the community. We are to drive the community in terms of economic, social, cultural well-being, and that's what we do.
Well, one of the things that is noteworthy and noticed is the collaborative element of the university and so many of the civic institutions in town.
Well, we do collaborate certainly with a lot of corporations, a lot of nonprofit corporations, and we also collaborate with other universities, schools, whether it's community colleges, four-year universities, K-12. That's what we're all about. So it's all sorts of collaborations.
Do you ever, in any sense, feel like kind of a poor cousin in town because you've got Washington University, you've got St. Louis University, certainly nationally known institutions, and then University of Missouri St. Louis, a commuter college?
Not at all. And in fact, when you say national reputation, if you look at us, we have a number of programs that are nationally ranked, either ranked by U.S. News and World Report, our international business program, our program in criminology, criminal justice, always ranked right near the top with U.S. News and World Report. Academic analytics ranks a number of our other programs, counselor education ranked in the top 10, information systems within our College of Business Administration. So we kind of have it all. A majority of our students do commute, although we do have 1,500 beds on campus right now. And we provide the workforce for the region, and yet we have internationally known programs. In terms of, you mentioned Washington University or St. Louis University, we have all sorts of collaborations with them. And one very obvious one with WashU is the engineering program. You start in taking your first 2 to 3 years on our campus through general education, transfer, and eventually get that engineering degree in cooperation with Washington University. We have all sorts of collaborative programs and research with St. Louis University. So I would just simply say that it's opportunities. I call it a mosaic of higher education. We all have our place and we all fit together very well.
You know, I don't think most people, when they think of the University of Missouri-St. Louis, think of its athletic programs. I was surprised to learn, for instance, and I'll have to look at my notes here, 75 All-Americans in 8 different sports at the University of Missouri-St. Louis.
Well, of course, I'm a real nut in athletics, and I enjoy it. We're Division II.
Yeah.
I just got back from the national meeting. It's held once a year, and this particular one was in Dallas. And Division II was a great division because the students are students first, athletes second. I mean, they're student athletes. We're in something called the Great Lakes Valley Conference. It's 16 teams. It stretches from western Missouri all the way through Kentucky. And I happen to be chairing the conference right now. And we're in the process of probably adding some teams. But yes, all of our students perform very well. And I must say, a little plug for our own athletic program. 2 years ago, we passed the 500 mark. And what I mean by that is we won more games with all our sports than lost. So we're kind of on an upward trajectory right now in terms of athletic performance.
And the girls' golf team, I think, is particularly well thought of.
Absolutely. And our women's basketball team right now, talking about women, is doing great. And and our volleyball team as well, tennis, I mean, softball. I mean, we have great athletes, women and men.
What do you see, Chancellor George, as the biggest challenges facing your institution and higher education in general today?
Well, I think, you know, it used to be that if you were a public institution, you could probably count on the state for the majority of your support. That you can't do. And in fact, it doesn't even matter what state you're in. You can't do that. Yet, at the same time, you can't be jacking tuition up to be too high because, you know, we serve a certain group of students that if it weren't for us, they would never get a four-year education, never get that baccalaureate degree or their master's or doctoral degree. So I see that with the declining state support, we have to find a better way of financing higher education and not fully on the backs of the students. So these are the challenges that we're grappling with.
This is going to be a big issue in the current session of the legislature. And from what I understand, among the things that is being talked about is tying funding for state universities to performance goals.
Yes.
Is that something you support?
Well, the governor is doing that. Many states do this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fine with having performance goals, performance measures. And, you know, all of the public institutions have been talking together of how we look at these particular measures and how we can rise to meet those measures in terms of getting additional funds from the governor, from the legislature. So we're certainly all responding to that.
How well prepared are today's students when they come to you?
You know, people will say, well, they're not as prepared. Others will say differently. I'd say they're as prepared. We've been very fortunate at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. The if you will, qualifications of our students coming in, it keeps going up. I mean, the ACT scores are going up and the class ranks and so forth. Yes, there are some remedial situations that we have to look into, and we do have some centers that address that. But, you know, certainly I don't think we would say students are so much poorly prepared now compared to before. I would not say that.
You of course, are a musician. And I just wonder, with the No Child Left Behind programs that are out there, now music, as well as some other things, get kind of short shrift. Do you sense that? You're smiling.
Well, I'm smiling because, I guess to a certain extent you are correct. I mean, the buzzword right now is STEM. You know, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And when there are major cuts in educational budgets, sometimes things like music or arts, may go. I mean, at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, we've actually been fostering and feeding our performing arts programs. In fact, right here in this facility where we're sitting at a grand center, we've got a major set of programs, particularly in the media arts, and that's the nice thing about this facility at Grand Center. So we try to look to have a student that's as well-rounded as possible, and yes, STEM disciplines are critical to our country, but also the other disciplines like music and fine arts as well.
So you don't find that, as some people have been critical of, quote, teaching to the test, that much has been lost?
Well, I mean, there is a certain amount of that. And when you do have tests that are gauged, I mean, certainly K through 12, to get your accreditation, you have scores. There has to be a certain amount of preparing students for the test. At the same time, we want students that are well-rounded. We want them to be educated. We want them to continue to be educated and to, you know, be great citizens beyond the classroom and beyond school. And I think having a range and a broad range of disciplines is what we really should be offering.
Do you have any sense of what can be done or what should be done to relieve students in any institution of this crushing debt that so many of them are experiencing when they get out of school?
It really is a problem. Mm-hmm. When we look at our students, I'd say two-thirds to three-quarters have debt, debt which is in the 20s of thousands of dollars. Now, in many cases, you get a good job, and in due time, you can climb out of that debt. But you know, this is a problem for us, and we certainly want to make sure that the federal government steps up with all of its programs, whether it's Pell Grants or other kinds of programs. We do everything we can in the private arena to raise as much scholarship dollars as possible. And what we also do in terms of our state resources, we continue to try to up the amount of scholarship dollars we put in from state resources. So we're constantly looking at students, looking at their financial profile, and trying to make it sure that they can get through the university. The worst thing we can have is a student not making it, not because they weren't successful in the classroom, but because they couldn't afford the education.
Yeah, money is the issue at all levels. Certainly, we look to the federal government, we look to the state government, but they have their own financial problems.
Yes, right.
And the economy makes it a lot more difficult for these kids coming out to find that job.
Get a better educated populace, they'll get jobs, they'll spend money, they'll drive the economy, and we will then have more money.
Right. It's pretty simple when you come right down to it, isn't it? My guest in studio is Chancellor Tom George of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. We are getting together today because the university is observing its 50th anniversary. A number of ceremonies are scheduled because of the anniversary, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that. We also want to get you into the conversation. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, and you can also reach us through Facebook. If you have questions for Chancellor George, come on in. How has the university affected your life? Let us know. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Chancellor Tom George of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. The university is observing its 50th anniversary this year, 2013. Chancellor George, we have a number of people who already want to get into the conversation. I have many questions, but let's get going with them. We'll start with Stacy, calling from St. Louis. Stacy, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Chancellor George.
Good morning to you both. George, this is Stacy Clay from College Summit, and certainly want to congratulate the university on its 50th anniversary. College Summit is a program that works with first-generation students and helping them achieve their college ambitions. And we've been partnered with the University of Missouri-St. Louis for the past 7 years. And Chancellor George, I have been struck by the university's commitment to providing resources to first-generation students, especially those from under-resourced communities, the type that College Summit works with. Led by Alan Bird and your admission team, you've done just some tremendous work. I'm wondering if you could tell the audience about some of the activities that the university engages in to get more first-generation students to your campus and keep them.
First of all, thank you for the comments, Stacy, on the summit. I mean, that's a great program, and I've attended all the ceremonies and have been involved with some of the activities there. And thank you for your praise of Alan Bird and the rest of our team. We work very closely with K through 12, and certainly through the admissions process, to make sure that students who are qualified can get into the university. And once they're in, we have to make sure that there are programs in place to help nurture them. If a student comes from a family and they're the first to go to college or go to the university, there might not be the full support structure at home that you would normally have. And we, in a sense, have to help provide that structure. And certainly College Summit and the principals there help along that. But once the students are in, making sure they succeed and making sure that we retain them is important. So people like Alan Bird, it's not just admissions, it's admissions and retention, and then ultimately success to graduation. I really do appreciate your comments.
Stacy, thanks so much for the call. Let's bring in Lawrence calling from St. Louis. Lawrence, go ahead.
Well, gentlemen, I want to talk about where you're at now and what you're on, and I'm not talking about the vicinity physically or prescription drugs. I'm talking about the frequency. Although the station is not 50 years old, I'm kind of interested, and I was attending that college at the time, but I can't recall the genesis of how KWMU-FM became in existence. So if you could say anything to that, I'd be interested in hearing it. I'm glad it's there.
I'll let Don Marsh take a shot at this.
Well, you know, I'm not really the one to do it because I can't answer that question. We have people in the building who can, and perhaps they can get some information to us with regard to that. I know the station started in the early 70s. It's been around ever since, and it's been doing very, very well ever since.
It has had different kinds of formats. I mean, it was, I think, largely a classical music station, and then it went into more of an all talk format. Each one of the four campuses has an NPR station, and it's owned by the Board of Curators, interestingly.
And it started in 1972, I'm advised, so I was pretty close on that. And Don Drehmeyer, who was one of your predecessors in the chancellor's office, was the gentleman who got it all started.
Yeah, and, Don eventually ended up being interim chancellor, deputy to the chancellor, dean of the College of Business Administration.
We have a number of people who have been here for a good number of those years since 1972. Mm-hmm. And you're right, it is quite an institution in and of itself. And we're very proud of what we do here and proud of our association with the university.
And mention now we are in new quarters. We're in a new building at Grand Center.
Well, you see a smile, Chancellor, on everybody's face as you come in. You remember what the old facility was like, where you are housed now out there on the big campus. But yes, this is a great facility, and we're very grateful to be here. Let's take another call. This one will be from Alex calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Alex. You're on the air with Chancellor Tom George.
Hello. The main concern that I would have over education or anything like that would be students like myself who didn't do so well in high school, but really do have high aspirations for, you know, actually doing something in life. And I find that is incredibly challenging and only leaves a few options for me. And I was just wondering exactly how the University of Missouri was, how exactly they deal with something like that.
Give me some more on yourself, Alex. Are you a graduate of University of Missouri-St. Louis?
No, I'm not. I actually am without college education at the moment, and I really do want to go to a good college, but one of the things that kind of holds me back from any kind of formal education is the environment and the atmosphere. I need a focused environment where everybody is actually concentrated on work and not just trying to goof off in class the entire time. I find it extremely frustrating because all my options are limited to environments like that that will not help me prosper.
Well, we tried not to have an environment where you are goofing off all the time, but rather a conducive environment to learning. And, you know, my suggestion is that you contact our admissions office, talk to them about, you know, your own situation. There are many pathways to higher education as well. I mean, about two-thirds to three-quarters of our students are actually transfers. They don't start off coming right out of high school, if you will, but they've had a lot of life experiences. Our average age is 28 years old. We try to be as responsive as possible to, I mean, many of our students are working part-time, full-time, raising families. So I suggest that you know, contact our admissions office, talk to them, and then find out what's the best pathway for you personally.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you for your call. You know, that would suggest, I hate to be appearing to make some sort of a blanket statement here, but it would seem to me that would indicate that the students that go to your institution are more serious, perhaps, than other students who are on a path where it's almost automatic pilot. High school, they're going off to college. These people really want the education.
In fact, that's correct, Don. And we have more corporations when they hire an UMSL graduate that say, that student hits the ground running. I mean, they've had to cope with so many of life's experiences already, and they are definitely self-motivated.
Does this change the way they are taught? Does this change the way that the professors and the instructors approach them?
I don't know about that because, you know, in a classroom or even in an online situation, you have all students. I mean, you have the student who perhaps is 18 years old that just came out of high school. You have another student that might be 45 years old and is working part-time, raising a family. They're all together. So it's not like we just cater to one particular group as opposed to another.
What is the student-to-professor ratio at Hussle?
It all varies by the programs. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, you can argue on the—I don't have the exact global ratio in the order of 20 or something like that, but it depends upon the discipline as to what it is.
Sure, sure. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Dave calling from Webster Groves. Dave, go ahead.
First of all, my daughter goes to UMSL, and she's in the social work program and just loves it, so thank you for that. And secondly, my question is that the current statistics suggest that that on average, a kid graduates from a national public university in 5.3 years, on average. So some are graduating longer than that, some shorter. But 5.3 years versus the conventional 4 years, you know, of a college education. And yet you talk about the additional costs and stuff like that. And my question is, why is that happening?
Well, first of all, I'll just have to be straight with you. When we quote graduation rates, typically at four-year publics in this state, we talk about six-year graduation rates. Yes, ideally, we'd like everyone to graduate in 4 years. But as I just mentioned earlier, a lot of our students are not going full time because they are working part time or full time jobs. And so it takes longer than your typical 4 or 5 years. Now, some programs like engineering or music actually do take longer than 4 years. But, you know, we do quote 6 year graduation rates. Having said that, the number of our graduates every year is going up. We now graduate over 3,000 students a year, and that's as high as we've ever done. So we're doing everything we can to get students out the door and get them graduated. But there's only so much you can do when a student is going part-time as opposed to full-time.
Yeah, gotcha. Can I just follow up real quick with one quick
sure.
question? When Lamar Alexander was Secretary of Education, he proposed the idea of a 3 year college education versus a 4 year.
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think for the traditional student going in 4 years, you can craft a 3 year. And actually, we've got a program also that does that at the university. Now, for our part time students, it would probably be the 5 year instead of the 6 year. Now, it involves going in the summers. And in fact, we've got very robust summer programs at UMSL. A lot of our students who are not UMSL students will come to those, but we can encourage students to go all year round. And we have faculty that like to teach in the summer. So you can do a 3 year degree program, but you're going to have to use the summers for that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Dave, thanks so much for the call. Another figure that I saw in researching this program is the number of students, graduates, I should say, who stay in this community. I mean, and that is certainly a big, big plus.
Yeah, we've got, you know, we're talking about our 50th Jubilee. We've got about 84,000 alums now, but about 62,000 are right here. And yeah, we like to say we provide the workforce, we feed the employment base for the community. And that's really true because, you know, we now have 62,000 alums from UMSL, more than any other university right here in the St. Louis region.
Back to the phones. And Ira in North St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yes, that's a perfect lead-in. Kim Hudson is a graduate. She's on Channel 2, you know, one of their, sometimes she anchors one of the reporters, and she came, you know, went to UMSL on a scholarship from the Bill Clay Foundation some years ago.
Well, that's good to hear. And you're talking about the scholarships we've done with the Clay family?
Yes.
Yes, and I remember, in fact, when I first got here 10 years ago, I talked to them, Congressman Clay and others, about increasing that number of scholarships, and we did that. And we're very grateful to them for their contributions to this.
You know, and one other thing, you know, I'm going to get down on this one, but Kim also worked at Channel 10, Channel 16, you know, back in the day before she got to Channel 2. And Don was one of our alumni at the station also.
At Channel 2, yes.
Well, no. I mean, that channel, the city's TV station.
I'm sorry, the what TV station?
It was Channel 16. You were there on a cable system for the city.
Well, I've done some work with them, yeah. Yeah, that was not my permanent employment.
No, you just on special programs, if I recall.
Yes, in fact, I did, and enjoyed it.
But thank you for mentioning the Clay scholarships. We appreciate that.
Oh, yes, and we appreciate what you're doing for the community.
Thank you.
Well, there's a nice building named after Congressman.
Congressman Bill Clay Sr. Yes, as a matter of fact, it's our Center for Nanoscience, and it was an appropriation, actually a grant through the Department of Energy, and this was maybe about 15 years ago. But it's attached to our science complex and just going gangbusters.
And of course, nanoscience is very close to your heart.
Well, it's my own particular area of research, right?
And how is that going? You know, we've done some programs on that in the past, and it's fascinating to think of what the potential is and where this is going.
There are so many different applications, whether it's in the electronics arena, or what's particularly exciting right now is in the medical arena. And we have a number of scientists at our university, Washington University, SLU, and other parts in the system, for example, at Columbia, that are working in areas of nanomedicine, coupling lasers to inducing chemical processes at the nanostructure level, for example, in cancer therapy. So some very exciting practical applications that we're seeing with this.
In which tumors can be targeted and just dealt with individually without having to destroy tissue.
That's correct. You're using chemistry, but you're using chemistry in a very localized fashion, so you simply don't invade the whole body like you do with chemotherapy. And I think in the future, that's what we're going to see as a means of treating cancer.
That's very, very exciting indeed. Let's talk to Suzanne, calling from St. Clair. Suzanne, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Cancer George, I want to say I've been in St. Louis 20 years, and I only recently visited the True Hope Performing Arts Center, which I think is just such a jewel. I love the performing arts and was fascinated by the building and what it offers to St. Louis. What does the university do to promote and to, you know, just increase the visibility of that wonderful center?
Well, thank you for that comment. Yes, we are very proud of the Toole Performing Arts Center. When I arrived a little less than 10 years ago, it was just built. So I was handed the keys and said, here, Chancellor, have some fun with this one. And we certainly have. And we have a number of acts nationally, internationally that come in, and people hear about those. But I should point out that this is also a teaching facility. And, you know, we use it. Thousands of students from K through 12 are passing through that facility. We have our faculty and students that are offering concerts. It's a very actively used facility, and it's got its niche and its place within the greater community. Right now, we're doing this interview from Grand Center. We certainly have the Fox Theater, the Sheldon, Black Rep, and the Kranzberg Arts Center. Well, you know, every place seems to have its niche. And the Peabody, not too far, I should mention, not too far from here. But the same with the Toole Performing Arts Center. And there's two facilities there. I just mentioned to people, there's a large theater called the Anheuser-Busch Theater, seats about 1,600. And then we have a smaller theater, seats about 350, which is the Des and Marianne Lee Theater.
And while we're talking about the Two Hill, let me just remind folks once again, we've alluded to this earlier, but the kickoff for the university's 50th anniversary jubilee will take place at the Two Hill at 6:30 on Friday, February 1st. And if you want more information on that, you can go to our website, stlpublicradio.org, and we have a link to the university's website, so you can get more information.
Thank you, Don. Thanks for that promo.
What exactly is going to be going on there?
Well, we're going to have some presentations. We're going to have different kinds of music, some historical context of what's going on. Steve Shankman's Motown Review is going to play at the end. I think there's even going to be some fireworks and going on. So it's just going to be a long celebration.
Shankman's a grad, isn't he not?
And he's one of our graduates as well.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's happening on February 1st, 6:30 at the Two Hill. Back to the phones now. Let's bring in Jerry calling from O'Fallon. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, good morning. First, I want to address the previous caller who is concerned about the ability to concentrate on schoolwork. I can tell you that compared to going to the University of Missouri in Columbia back in the 70s, we didn't have much choice because there really weren't the number of distractions that you normally associate with college life when you went to UMSL. So I guess you could call that a plus. I wasn't at the beginning of KWMU, but I did serve on the student staff from 1975 through 1977, and I think it was primarily just a classical music station. We were very fortunate that the student staff was able to coerce Marty Hinden, who was with the St. Louis Cardinals, UMSL grad, to get press passes for the 76 and 77 seasons, which were probably provided some of my better memories of being there. So I just wanted to make that comment. And
well, thanks for mentioning Marty. I mean, we've had a display of some of his memorabilia. And I just I remember going to his office when I first got here at the Bush Stadium. I was just blown away. But he's just one of our most spectacular alums.
Yeah, and I think he was kind of partial. I don't think that was something that was usually considered for, you know, student, non-professional media people. But I guess he had a soft spot in his heart for us.
We loved Marty.
Thank you for the call, Jerry. Yeah, going to Marty's office was like going inside a vending machine or something. We're just surrounded by stuff, Cardinal memorabilia.
Just great.
Yeah, he was a heck of a guy. Let's continue with the phones. And Chris and Bethalto, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just talking to the gentleman that answers the phones there. And my parents went to UMSL, and they always talked about Ed Potter and how he was involved with UMSL, but I don't really know much about what he did there. But I was just the gentleman that answered the phone just confirmed that is a relation of one of your announcers, Steve, I think his name is.
Steve Potter, yeah.
Yeah. I was just curious about that and what Ed Potter did.
Boy.
I can take the answer off the air, but I appreciate it.
Maybe if we could get you the answer off the air, I don't know.
He was at Normandy High School, apparently, and he was one of the early counsels to the founders. That's the explanation that I get. I don't know him. Again, that certainly precedes.
If he was at Normandy High School, that, of course, is right in the area where the university is located.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chris, we'll put you on hold, and we can get you some more information, I think, that way. We'll,
I appreciate that.
We've got some people in
fact, I'm curious myself.
Yeah. And the fact that Ed Potter was related to Steve Potter, we will not hold that against him. And I hope Steve is listening, as he probably is. We have to take another break. Let's do that now. My guest in studio, Chancellor Tom George of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. This is the 50th anniversary year of the university, and that's why we're chatting today. And again, we welcome your comments and questions. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can reach us on Twitter and also through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Chancellor Tom George of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Well, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, Chancellor, is online learning. This seems to be growing in leaps and bounds in some places. What's going on at UMSL with regard to online learning?
Well, we're part of that growth. And certainly we're offering more and more online courses, and not just courses, but programs. I mean, in our program in communication, for example, you can get that online. And, you know, the online offerings, it could be someone that is right here in the region. It could be a student, we always joke and say, in their bunny slippers in their residence hall doing it, or someone somewhere around the world. But certainly it's there. We're increasing the offerings that we can do with online learning. The ideal situation, of course, is to be in a classroom with an instructor face-to-face, but we don't always have that convenience.
Is this where education is going, higher education, in the sense that because of the expense that we were talking about earlier, it would make it more attractive, perhaps, to a lot of people?
Yeah, I would say where we're going is the hybrid model. I mean, it's a combination of online, if you're able to have something which is face-to-face, or even within a given class. I mean, we were the first, I think, in the state to offer an online degree, MBA degree program. Was it 100% online? No. Part of it was online. Part there was face-to-face with the instructor part of the time. Part of the session, students could interact with each other in a live fashion as opposed to doing it through the internet. But yes, I think we're going in a hybrid fashion. And, you know, is the traditional university gone? Oh, no. We have our buildings. We have our classrooms. But we're having a wider range of offerings and opportunities for students.
Are there other ways in which today's digital world, which is expanding exponentially, it seems, week in and week out almost, any ways in which the digital world is affecting what you do as an institution?
Well, I mean, the opportunities are there. We expect every student's going to have some sort of electronic device or different types of electronic devices. instructors are now using this in the classroom, and we have assumptions that students have access to these. I mean, I like to go back to when my days of teaching general chemistry back in the 70s when electronic calculators started. Well, at that time, we thought, that's wrong, it's evil. Well, what we did was we rolled with it. We said, okay, well, let's make the assumption every student's going to have that. When you give an exam, it's not going to simply be memorization anymore. It's going to have to be some thought processes because you've got the memorization right there in your hand. So we have to adapt and roll with technology and also use it to our advantages to give a better educational experience for students.
Yeah, and who knows where it's going to take us in the next years.
That's right. I mean, we're in that digital era right now. I like to think of higher education in 50-year blocks, but right now I think with digital education, I think probably maybe 5 or 10-year blocks.
I wonder why you've chosen 50 years
as
a block.
I chose 50 because, you know, around the turn of the century, 1900, the land grant was born and used to be church related, then it became broader for, you know, the public, and then after World War II, the research university was born, and anyway, there's sort of 50-year blocks I like to think about.
And we are, of course, talking about the 50th anniversary of the university.
That's why I use the word 50.
All right. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Daryl. Daryl, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Chancellor George.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I had a question about UMSL being it's such a big part of the St. Louis community. And I'm wondering, is there anything that UMSL does in terms of, like, I guess, community outreach or giving back to the community, not specifically university-oriented, but any programs?
I'm glad you asked that. You know, I mentioned earlier, for example, this is one specific program, but this Monday we had our Martin Luther King Day of Service, and we had hundreds of students go out in the community and volunteer. Our athletes have a component of their experience that involves them going out in the community and volunteering. We have all sorts of other programs that are initiated by people in the community. We have university people participating in a newly formed Kiwanis Club in Normandy, and their charge is to go out and help in the community. And then we also have places on campus that do this. We have a Center for Volunteer Services, and that makes sure that we have opportunities available for those who want to volunteer on the campus. We have a Public Policy Research Center. Now, a lot of what they do involves grants and contracts through the community, but they're out doing things in the community, and the grants and contracts simply help provide the resources to enable them to do as good a job as possible. But that's really what we're all about.
Oh, excellent. Well, you know, I'm asking, I guess I have a program that I do with primary education students. It's a drama-based literacy program. I do a writing workshop, collect the stories, I hire actors, and then go back to the school and perform the stories for the kids, the actual people that wrote them. And, you know, of course, resources are limited for schools, and I'm wondering if that might be something that UMSL might want to collaborate with or
I'll tell you what. That sounds very exciting. You email me some info on this, and I'll see if I can hook you up with people. My email address is T, that's for Thomas, F for Frederick, George, TF George, at UMSL.edu, at UMSL.edu. Send me an email on that, and I'll follow up.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Sure.
Thanks for your call. Do you have any sense, Chancellor George, that young people today are more interested perhaps in community service than they once were, or vice versa?
You know, I get the sense that they are. Now, I offer a little caution because in my career, I've been at some other universities that are perhaps more traditional in terms of the student body. I spent my first 13 years as a faculty member at University of Rochester, and that's the more traditional student body. But certainly what I'm seeing at the University of Missouri St. Louis, I would say for sure they are more community-oriented. They feel a sense of giving back to the community, maybe because so many of our students have been helped. Financially. They might maybe don't get all they need, but they've been helped, but they get that sense that you have to give back to the community.
And it is their community, and obviously, as the numbers show, they stay in this community.
They stay. Yeah, that's correct, Don. They stay here, yes.
Okay, back to the phones. Let's talk to Ed in St. Louis. Ed, thanks for being with us. You're on the air.
Yes. My parents sent me to St. Louis University, where you're very close to, and I graduated a accounting degree in 1972. Several years later, I needed to get a master's degree, and I had to pay for it. It was a master's in accounting, and I paid for it at UMSL, okay? And I got it when I was in my 40s, and I paid for it. I have a 38-year-old son and a 15-year-old daughter, and I'm going to say they get so much joy from music, and I am so glad that this guy who's sitting there plays music, because I'll tell you, I sit there, I'm 62 years old, I sit there, and I don't count beans. I listen to music and the joy. And my kid, my 15-year-old and my 38-year-old get that joy. And a practicing musician has, because anyway, I am so glad.
Well, what you just said is music to my ears.
And that's straight from the guy who is sitting here.
Well said.
Yes, Ed, thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Carolyn Clayton, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that in my mid-30s, went to UMSL and graduated in 1964. But during that time, when I first went to UMSL, I was told by a professor that I was taking the place of a student that really meant to graduate. And I did graduate. I went on to Washington U, and I had a career, and I'm 82 years old. But UMSL brings back many memories, and I was there when it had a swimming pool in one building, and that's how it started out. So thanks.
I've heard about that swimming pool. I'm a swimmer, and I wish we had that pool on the outside. We have one inside campus. I should mention, you mentioned you're 82. Several years ago, we gave a master's degree in history to a fellow that's 85. He walked across the stage, and when I handed him the diploma, I said, now you're headed for your doctorate. And he said, no, that's it.
I'm going to stop right here. Carol, thanks so much for the call. She was, I guess, a member of the first graduating class.
I guess.
Must have been in 64.
Because we started in 63.
But isn't it interesting how times have changed, how she was told at that time.
Oh, that's not the case now at all.
Oh, of course not.
Absolutely not.
Of course not. But
absolutely,
I mean, to think that someone would say that you're just taking up space that really belongs to somebody else.
You want to come back and get another degree, we'll welcome you with open arms.
Carol, thank you so much for the call. Linda in St. Louis, go ahead. You're on the air with Chancellor George.
Yes, thank you. I graduated from UMSL. I started when you had your first new building, Benton Hall, in 66, and graduated in 70 when you had a number of new buildings. But I may have missed this earlier in the program, but I haven't heard anything said about the fact that the university was started by the people in the Normandy area themselves. And the Normandy School District isn't just the building next door, it was people in the Normandy School District who started the university in the first place.
Yeah, and that's correct. I mean, we had legislation, and we thank Wayne Good, who is now the chair of our Board of Curators, was a representative at the time, then became a senator, that helped to enable that legislation. And yes, we did get land from the Normandy School District. Now, I should mention just jokingly that when they want to use our facilities, they remind me about that, that this goes back 50 years ago. But yes, this was a partnership with the Normandy School District.
Also, I'll point out, Linda, that we have a history of the institution on our website at stlpublicradio.org. You might go there if you want some more detail. But
thank you.
Actually, I should be saying the UMSL website, but we have a link to that on our site as well for the Jubilee that's happening. So if you want more information, you can do it that way.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. A couple of things I'd like to just bring into the conversation, Chancellor, that relate to things that are going on in the news these days. We've all been reading, of course, about security on various educational institutions. Just wondering how you approach that and what the feeling is at your institution with regard to security.
Well, we take all of this very seriously. We've got a great security force led by a Chief Forrest Van Ness. We have specialized training for our officers, whether it's dealing with the suicidal situations. We have mock programs that look at possibilities of when you're going to have some sort of an attack that would occur. But, you know, this is something that we are very serious about, the safety of all of our students and those that come onto campus. And I should say, I look at our records, they come out on a daily sense. And, you know, fortunately, we're a little kind of boring in that respect. And by boring, I mean that not a lot is happening. And we want to keep it that way.
Yeah, it certainly is striking what's been going on across the country.
Oh, absolutely.
And for administrators such as yourself, it has to be just something to really, really be concerned about.
Right.
Another issue that has gotten some publicity here in our region recently has been the issue of tenure. St. Louis University has had some problems and some controversy surrounding that. Is that an issue that is likely to have some ramifications at UMSL?
Well, we actually have a five-year post-tenure review, so I mean, we already do that. Particularly the way we do it, it's viewed as a means of simply enhancing and helping someone's career after you go through the tenure process. So it's not like you're coming in with an axe and, okay, now you have to go through the whole tenure process again. But we want to make sure that our faculty, after they get tenure, continue to be productive. And for the most part, they are. I mean, that's fortunately, we've got, you know, great faculty at the associate and the full professor level. But, you know, it's a process. Many universities have a kind of a post-tenure review simply as a way of touching base and saying, how are you going?
Yeah. Is tenure a good thing?
It's what we have, and I'd say yes. I probably, since I am in the academy, I would subscribe to tenure. It gives you that kind of freedom, and to a certain extent, security, but freedom to do the best things you can for yourself and for the university. And when you hear about a case of someone where tenure didn't work, those are far and few between. That's not the norm. Mm-hmm. The norm is our people that we tenure are very successful faculty members. They're contributing in a vibrant way to the university and to their careers.
You know, another issue that received so much publicity in the last year or so was the situation at Penn State. And I'm bringing this up only to raise the issue of ethics and how a university, an institution such as yours, approaches the whole issue of ethics for staff and students.
Again, something we take very seriously. And no institution is without issues. And when we do encounter an issue, we act as quickly as possible and expeditiously as possible on that issue. We actually have a new institute on campus. It was appropriated by the legislature several years ago, Institute for Ethics and Public Life. And that is designed for people that are doing public service and to make sure that they behave as ethically as possible.
Occasionally, a blip of what we call negative publicity will pop up. And such was the case, I think, a television program here was talking about some co-eds who were receiving tuition money from older men. And of course, administrators would have no way of knowing who's paying the tuition. I'm curious as to when stories like this do appear. What sort of harm, if any, do they do the institution?
I'm not sure if this really did harm, but a story like this really accentuates the need for us to have more scholarship dollars, more resources, and help for students. That's private foundations, private individuals, which we're working on, more dollars of scholarships from our state resources. So, this says we have to put more dollars and more help for our students.
Yeah. Only a couple of minutes left. I want to talk about the future and what you see as some of the bright spots that you can point to with some certainty as to what's going to be happening at UMSL.
Well, I used to say we're a teenager. I think we're probably past the teenager years right now. We are coming into full adulthood as an institution. Our programs are very vibrant. We'll selectively add certain programs as we go along. I'll give you an example of a program that's relatively new that's very exciting. That's our biotechnology program. And that cuts across our Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry and Department of Biology, both at the baccalaureate degree and the master's degree. Something that's timely, something that makes sense. We're developing cooperative courses in nanomedicine with the University of Missouri and Columbia and also with Washington University. So we're looking for opportunities of things that are timely and probably cutting across disciplines. We're seeing a lot more of that. So what we see in the next 10 years is going to be very exciting at the university.
And in just a few seconds, the research opportunities there are extraordinary, it seems to me.
Absolutely. Now, we need the federal government to continue to fund basic research. So talk to your congressmen, talk to your senators, congresswomen. I mean, everything, we need the federal government to help as well as the state.
Well, if the federal government could straighten itself out, that would be a step in the right direction, wouldn't it?
Well, give us some money while they're straightening themselves out.
Yeah, okay. Chancellor Tom George of the University of Missouri-St. Louis, thanks so much for being with us. Congratulations to you and the institution as you celebrate this 50th anniversary. I'll remind the audience once again that the kickoff for the 50th anniversary jubilee will take place at the Two Hill at 6:30 on Friday, February 1st, that is. It's February 1st. We have a link to the university website for more information on our website. website at stlpublicradio.org. Again, Chancellor George, thanks so much for being
with
us.
Thank you, Don.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the St. Louis Synesthesia's lab research of synesthesia, a condition where input from one sense is received through another sense and other areas of perception. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.